Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to We Love No Other podcast from lineofwar.com. Tyler is with me. We're doing a postmortem on the season, and I don't want to lose what we were just talking about before I hit the record button, so I want to go straight into it. So it is right now 10:10 p.m. on Thursday night, so that's when we're recording this. He casually asked me if I had watched Michigan State. Well, actually, you didn't even ask me that because you knew I didn't. But let's talk about that, the ability to watch versus how I go about it. So, A, you were just saying it's a really good game. So continue with whatever you were saying, and then we'll just continue this conversation.
This is not a steadfast rule. It's just how my brain has worked over the past, you know, I guess, past three seasons now since we played in the tournament. I've kind of established a one-round mourning period. That if we lose, I'm not going to watch the next round. Like after Thursday, I didn't watch anything the rest of the weekend.
Yep.
But when today dawned, I was like, yep, let's roll. I'm watching basketball all night. I'm leaning into this. So
Interesting.
So that's kind of what I don't know. It's just that it felt okay. And that game was something else. It goes against every fiber of your fandom, but
well, I mean, the thing for me is that it's another Big Ten team. I do not want Michigan State in the freaking Elite Eight, and so like I mean, this is you want to talk ultimate NCAA tournament experience for me if Illinois loses is this, where there's what, eight teams in and now they're all gone. Like, yes. That's glorious, okay?
Well, that's just standard operating procedure for the Big Ten, and that's why I watch. I find myself with a rooting interest. So, like, I'm watching Michigan State, Kansas State, with a huge rooting interest for Kansas State. I'm watching UCLA, Gonzaga now, because I really want UCLA to win, because, of course, I want to hang the banner that says we beat the eventual national champions, right? So
we want UCLA and Texas to play in the final.
Right.
Wait, could they? I don't even know. I haven't looked at a bracket.
I don't know the answer to that question bracket wise, if they would mean. But.
Yeah. Yeah. I just, I don't know. Like, I'm not a bitter person like this in other things in life. Like, I was never the guy of, like, oh, hey, the girl dumped me. Oh, I hope somebody. Next boyfriend cheats on her. Like I'm very soft in every area of life, but like the NCAA tournament becomes, if Illinois loses, or even if like the NCAA tournament besides the Illinois game is, I need Missouri to lose. Okay, they have to continue to be the second worst team in the history of the NCAA tournament. BYU is number one, but Missouri is now 29 tournaments without making a Final Four. BYU is at 30. Yes, I know those stats off the top of my head. Missouri has to lose. So I am an emotional wreck when Missouri is playing in the NCAA tournament, because I just don't want to know the score, because I just know they're freaking winning and it's bothering me to my core and I just can't stand it. So I need Missouri to lose. Then in the Big Ten, I need Iowa and strangely Northwestern. I need them to lose quickly. I don't want Iowa in the Sweet 16 before we get there. Please God, no. So that's second to Missouri for me. Third, for whatever reason, because Northwestern's there, it's like, no, they cannot claim like best team in the state. Like, I can't have this whole thing flip on its head. You know, it's 143-43 in the history of that series. We have 100 more victories. I cannot let them be ahead. So there's those games, and then everybody else. I can't have Izzo in the Elite Eight again. No, I can't have Indiana making the Sweet 16. If Michigan's in the tournament, please no. Like, there's no, I don't have some like, oh, Maryland, they're kind of new. Maybe I'll cheer for Maryland. I need everyone losing as quickly as possible.
I'm with you on that. And as an aside, had you been watching in the second round last weekend, it was a great hate watching day by any
sense
of losing, except for Michigan State, who lost tonight. So, you know, for me, I have to establish a rooting interest. And because of the same things you mentioned, that's why I can watch these games. I don't watch random NFL, like a Monday Night Football or Sunday Night Football. If it's teams I'm not interested in, I just won't watch.
Yep.
But if I can find some sort of rooting interest, everything you mentioned, all those teams, exactly, 100%.
Yep.
I'm in. That's why I was watching tonight.
Yep.
I'll watch the rest of the tournament, even though there's not much rooting interest left anymore, except for, you know, I am rooting for UCLA and Texas.
Yep. I will monitor the national title game in case there's a possible historic moment that I need to tune in for. I don't know if I like need to tell my grandkids I watched it live or something, but I will monitor that score. But otherwise, the tournament's dead, and I don't care. And maybe this is a good first topic before we get into our season.
Would you care, as before you get into that, would you care that Florida Atlantic is going to go to the Elite Eight?
I mean, I like a good underdog story just like anyone else. You know, I enjoyed Dunk City, you know. I you know, what was that, Florida Gulf Coast, you know. So I could probably get into FAU like I was into Dunk City, you know. I enjoyed St. Peter's. I love the mustache, you know. I enjoy that.
I didn't know if you ascribe the same. How can Florida Atlantic have an Elite Eight when we haven't had one in 23?
No, it's completely personal. It's completely personal. It is 100%. You know, I know what Tom Izzo said about the game after Matty Sissoko broke Io's nose and wasn't called for a foul. I lost respect for Tom Izzo in that moment, and I will never regain it. And he needs to lose every time he's playing. Okay? The end. And so, like, mine is completely orange and blue based. That's all I have. Everything is filtered through the Illini. So, if there was some... Wait, who did we lose to when Kofi committed? We just had this moment.
Florida A&M.
Okay.
I believe.
Okay. I just had a moment like, oh, wait, do we have a history with FAU? But, you know, when it's everything ties through us. So, you know,
it's Florida. No, it was Florida Atlantic. It is.
It really was. How about that? I mean, I don't really hate him for that. It's just funny thing that like,
and never made that connection.
Yes. We always said like, oh great. Now Kofi's never going to come here. And then he commits after watching us lose to FAU. You know, so maybe I should have a little FAU bitterness or something, but, yeah, I don't think there's a bitter story left in this turn. Really? Let me think about this. Gonzaga, I don't like. I like Raj, and so I'd be okay with Raj. UCLA, Texas, I'd like the fact that the teams we, you know, be kind of neat story if they were playing later.
Well, you got Kelvin Sampson still.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's a good point. It's a good point. Yeah. Bruce Pearl's out.
yeah, you have the best player on Kansas State recruited by Bruce Weber. I don't know if that holds any sway.
yeah, I can't. I'm not three levels down on that. I don't really have. Yeah, Sampson, I guess, would be it. But yeah, I just don't have those emotions. Now, that, of course, begs the question, you know, for you, with all those things removed, because I know you carry that bitterness as well. With all those things removed, it's an easy watch. For me, I just don't want anything to do with it. And that's because we're not part of it anymore. And especially because, look, let's start with the bad here. I was in a group text. I don't remember what group text this was. And I just needed a stat, and so I dropped the stat that Arkansas had more wins in the 2022 and 23 tournament than we've had in the tournament in the last 17 years. Sorry, I probably leaned a little too close to the mic for that. We have 4 NCAA tournament wins in 17 years. And that's where I'm at with this season. I see all of these takes about our season, and they're saying, you know what, for, you know, people will just tell me, like, you know, this is the kind of season I just didn't get into it. Maybe it's a transfer portal. I didn't watch a few games. You know, it was never going to be, it never did, but, you know, this and that. I got no bitterness like I had the last 2 years. And I don't have that experience. I mean, obviously, because I'm going to all these games, and if I'm driving to Penn State to watch us get killed, I'm going to hold it personally, kind of like, ugh. But where we're at right now is this tournament thing is looming so heavily over my head that we have 1 win in 2011, 1 win in 2013, 1 win in 2021, and 1 win in 2022. And those are the only wins since Dee and Augie graduated. And that's just so... I hate that it's still here, because we're back, and Underwood's 55 and 25 in the Big Ten the last 4 years, and we're this. But this tournament thing, man, it looms larger and larger and larger every year. And that's kind of my takeaway from this season. Everybody's just like, oh, shrug, don't care. And I'm like, man, we've cemented it now. We have poured cement around our NCAA tournament thing, and it's never going away until we get to a Sweet 16. And that's where I'm at on March 23rd. So tell me your thoughts on that.
I think the irony is that Underwood, I think, also feels that. And he went about, you mentioned Arkansas. He went about, after getting beat by Houston, I think he was mesmerized a little bit, or enchanted by the Houston philosophy of run a bunch of athletes down there. And it may not be a team that, it may struggle during the year from a Big Ten standpoint, but it's built for March. He kept saying that we're built for March.
Yep.
And so I think that's the genesis or the evolution of why this team was constructed the way it is, because I think Underwood feels the same way, that, you know, he wants to put a mark on a tournament. Not that he wouldn't want, you know, Big Ten tournament. I mean, Big Ten championships are great, but as you mentioned, 4 wins in 20 whatever years, or 19 years. What is it? 18 years.
17 years.
Yeah. So if for
this
whatever
is just reason, one of the 17 years. Sorry. I have to drop that line every time I can. Continue.
So yeah, he puts together a team that he thinks is similar in makeup and style to a Houston or an Arkansas or any of these other random teams that have a bunch of athletes that they throw out to you and can defend and run the floor and just seem to do better in the tournament than the Big Ten, who obviously there's a Big Ten problem, because it's been several seasons since there's been a Big Ten team, even in the Elite Eight. It's, you know, the conference has a problem. So yes. I think Brad Underwood recognized it. I just think that, one, the roster construction wasn't as good as I think he would have, looking back, and I think he made, you know, some errors, and that we can probably get into that. And there were some issues, obviously, that happened during the year that were out of his control, and, you know, with Sky Clark and so on and so forth. But, you know, I think he feels the same pressure you do, and or that the fans feel. I don't know if it's pressure, but I think he feels the same urgency, we'll say. And I think that he'll continue to, when he reflects, he's like, I think I had the right idea. I just think my execution was poor.
Yeah. Yeah. And, I mean, you and I had this conversation in October, right? Like, when we were talking about setting up the preview, and I was asking you, you know, the intro to the preview, I wrote out basically that conversation that you and I had, which was my struggle to adapt to a transfer portal world, because, you know, I've always followed this formula of you get the freshmen in, they're not much yet, then there's some sophomore leaps, that junior year is everything. And this was supposed to be the Curbelo and Miller junior year, and it was going to be this kind of thing. And since those two are gone, we're just not going to have that kind of year. But now the transfer portal allows you to go say, okay, well, lost those two, let's add these two. And I was just struggling to adapt to that world because my entire formula that I view basketball toward is build it, build it, build it, build it, and, you know, then just keep plugging in guys who are reaching their junior and senior year. Let's go back to October. You know, what were the first signs, do you think, that, you know, we're ranked preseason, what were we, 23? We didn't end the season ranked. We were a 9 seed, which suggests you're 33 to 36. So, you know, we fell short of even AP poll expectations. So what, you know, just generally October to now, what do you think was the main ingredient that was missing?
Well, I don't think it's any secret. It was shooting from that standpoint. But also in the preview, when I was much more bullish than even the preseason polls were on us, I leaned heavily into what I thought Scott Clark was going to be. I thought we were going to get a sophomore leap from RJ, and we were robbed for the second straight year of our sophomore leap. We didn't get our Curbelo leap because of a concussion, and the sophomore that leaped ended up playing Santa Clara.
And just declared for the draft.
Yeah. I thought RJ was going to be better. I really thought Scott Clark was going to be a better player than he was even before he left. But the two biggest question marks at the beginning of the year for me were the shooting, which played out, and also would you be able to entrust the keys to this team with two freshman guards? And it just, both of those were a complete F minus on a grading scale. So,
yeah,
and those were the Achilles heels for this team all season. I couldn't shoot, and you know, you can survive shooting if you have a playmaker that can set guys up for other good shots, because you know you're going to create good shots. But we didn't have anybody that could do that, and we had an issue with shot selection all season. And I think, you know, I don't know which came first, chicken or the egg, but I think those are the two biggest issues. And they were warning signs to me. I mean, I wrote about them in the preview. I just looked past them. We saw what happened. So.
Yeah, I think it's important maybe to pause here and say, like, this is a lovely conversation to have. Like, we are lamenting a 9 seed, okay? We had those 7 years without a tournament in the 2010s. Where we were just begging for 18 wins. And so this is, let's not lose perspective. This is a great debate to be having. Why did we only finish tied for fifth in the Big Ten? You know, like that's not a disaster. You know, we've been top five in the Big Ten, 4 years in a row now? And so, like, it's we're in the right spot. What we're discussing is the kind of the continued tournament. Like, there was this hope when I was driving in Des Moines that, okay, yes, last 3 years, we're a top 25 team, and we roll in the tournament. We were number two in 2021, and it just didn't happen in the tournament. This year, let's do the opposite. We're just struggling most of the year. We finished tied for fifth in the Big Ten. What if we went out and made the Elite Eight or whatever? And then it was a vulnerable Kansas that Arkansas showed us, and we couldn't beat Arkansas. So, you know, I just don't want to lose the perspective, the overall big picture. I want to make sure people understand what we're complaining about. These are good complaints to have: a coach that can get you to the tournament every year, a system, a program, the recruiting is good, the talent spotting is good. It's just, this was a year where 85% of the scoring went out the door the year before, and what we assembled just didn't happen, and the freshman guard left, and the shooting wasn't there, and everything else. So I just wanted to pause 20 minutes in here and just list out the, you know, here's the big picture of what we're discussing. It's fine, and it's okay, and this happens, but let's dig more into, you know, what specifically happened with this team that left us here. The next thing I want to talk about is road losses. We lost, our last seven Big Ten road games? Six. Our last six Big Ten road games. You know, what did you make of that? Because this has been a team the last 3 years that has won a lot of road games in the Big Ten. What were your thoughts on that?
One, I think that, you know, regression to the mean kind of a thing too. Because you know, we didn't play well against good teams at home either. We lost. We got, you know, killed by Penn State at home. We got beat by Indiana at home. It's just this the inconsistency is, it, I think, was spread across the board pretty evenly, whether it was home or road. But I think, again, if we dive a little more into the what I think maybe the culture issue was under what kept referring to this season, you know, and looking at the NCAA tournament, obviously the portal is not going to go away. I mean, the portal is part of the fabric of the NCAA tournament and college basketball moving forward. And there are tons of teams that are still playing that have tons of transfers. Kansas State is almost all transfers. And they're in the Elite Eight. But I think there are some lessons to be learned. And I don't know if it's specific to road games, but I just, again, trying to think of the overall deep dive into what the struggles of the roster makeup was, is it, if you're going to go into the, lean heavy into the portal, is it a good idea to lean on transfer portal guys as your main guys? You know, if you're doing that, you're probably trying to find guys from other high major schools who are looking for a change of scenery. And if that's the case, why are they leaving the situation that they were in? You know, why does Matt Meyer leave a Baylor, one of the best programs in the country? Why does Terrence Shannon Jr. leave Texas Tech? Well, maybe we, you know, get a better sense of that now, knowing that their coach is a crazy racist Bible thumper, but that's neither here nor there. It's just, you guys have, you know, it's a different philosophy than, is it better to bring transfers in from guys who are transferring up and have a chance to grow into the program after a year or two, as opposed to bringing in guys who you are going to rely on, because they're going to get their shots. They're going to be a focal point, because that's the hope. I mean, that's kind of what I'm sure was promised to them coming in, is like, hey, you're going to come in here and be the man. And that's what I think when you're dealing with the guys from other high major programs, that's what you have to sell them on. And that issue, I think, is part of why, again, by any metric, from a production standpoint, Meyer and Shannon delivered. I mean, if those guys weren't on the team, this is not a ninth seed. This is a 12th team, 12th in the Big Ten team roster, right?
Yeah.
But were those types of guys the types of players that are going to lead you to a truly winning season, a meaningful season? And that comes with, you know, the culture you described, to bring it back to the road game. That's what you're missing, to have guys that have been in the wars in the Big Ten and know what it's like what it takes to win at Michigan or Indiana or Purdue. And that's something that just wasn't there on this team.
What do you think is the, I don't know. Like, when I think of the portal, you know, let's look at Penn State. You know, they got Pickett from Siena. They got Funk from Bucknell. Is that right?
I believe so. Cameron Winter was from, played against us in the NCAA tournament, from Drexel.
Yeah. So,
but again, all guys who transferred up.
That's what I'm saying. That's where I'm going, is like, what we've done, the transfer across Danger, Baylor to Illinois, Meyer Baylor to Illinois, Shannon Texas Tech to Illinois, Plummer Utah to Illinois. You know, we've looked on rosters of you know, of guys that are at high major programs. You know, is that a thing? Like should we be looking for you know, those level of players who are looking to move up? I mean, I'm not saying you can't be successful you know, with players transferring across and not up, but you know, it just seems a little more Underwood like to go find Thomas Walkup, you know, and bring him to Illinois, kind of thing, you know.
Well, that's exactly what I'm saying. He may reassess that and say, is that the right way? Is the transfer portal better used to get mercenaries who are here, like, as you say, transferring across from another high major and are only going to be here for a year? They're here to kind of do their thing, become more of a focal point from where they were, which leads to, you know, chemistry issues possibly and shot selection issues, as we often saw. Or do you bring guys in who are going to grow in the program?
Yeah.
And that's the better way to use the portal. I think that's the big question at hand, because there's two distinctly different philosophies. I see guys, I think Penn State's a good example, see teams who have lots of transfers who have been in the program for at least a second year, who have Texas is a good example. They struggled in the same way with their first year transfers last year. This year they kind of melded together and yep. become a much more cohesive group.
Yep.
You're not going to get that chance when you're bringing guys in one at a time. So,
yep.
But you're looking for the quick fix. Again, I think yep. that's where his calculus was this year. If he doesn't bring those guys in, he finishes 12th in the Big Ten, and what's the better option?
And they're gone, and well, I mean, Danger's still here, obviously, but, you know, 1 year and out for Shannon and Meyer, and they were the two leading scorers, and, you know, maybe they did bridge the gap. I mean, if we put together a good roster for next year, and we get a leap from Ty Rogers, and we get, you know, a leap from Epps and whatever, and it's, you know, it's, it starts to build back toward a 2021 kind of vibe, then we'll probably look back on this year and say, oh yeah, well, gosh, there was that 1 year they just didn't have anything. So they, like your name, I like mercenaries, you know, they hired two mercenaries to come in and clean things up. And we got a 9 seed and kept our tournament streak going. And then, you know, we got it all back around and flowing and going. So, yeah, it's just so interesting because look, I am the guy who I've written about it 300 times. I am a stars guy. I am a, you got to have dudes. I am a, you know, our, how many times in the mid 2000s did I write, look, I love Brandon Paul and I love Malcolm Hill and everything else, but we need a Nick Anderson and we need a Darren Williams and we need some, you know, we need that star. And then Io comes along and he rescues us and Kofi comes along. So my view looking toward the future is I like a lot of these pieces. I really like that stretch in the Arkansas game when it was next year's team doing a lot. I enjoyed that little run from you know, when we sat the transfers and such. But is there that star on the horizon? Because that's my main probably... Yeah, it's my main concern, I would say, going forward, is I want to see another Io on the horizon, and I want to see another Kofi. I'm not expecting first-team All-Americans, but every great Illinois team has had Frank Williams in 2001. Every great Illinois team has had, you know, look at the 84 team with Winters and Douglas, and, you know, like every good Illinois team has plus-plus players leading the way. And I don't see that guy right now in the pipeline that's going to be that next superstar.
Right. So the other question is, are you willing to be patient? Yeah. Is that next guy a high school freshman? A high school senior and freshman next year? Is it a guy who's going to transfer up and be a grow over another 2 seasons? So essentially what I mean by patience, are you willing to have a down year? So I'm sure you could find more mercenaries to get you to a 7, 8, 9 seed again. But is the better long-term arc for the program say, hey, we need to get back to building. We're still going to use the transfer portal strategically, but we're going to do it in a way that allows our culture to be reestablished because it didn't happen. I think Underwood's plan this year was, let's bring in these freshmen, Epps, Rogers, RJ. I mean, the second year of RJ. Those guys are going to be the keepers of the culture, but we're going to sprinkle in some of these high-profile guys to kind of up the ante a little bit. But I think the bringing in those high-profile guys stunted the growth of some of the culture guys, and that's therein lies the rub, because yeah. Now you're So you're going to have to decide if you're willing to maybe take a step back, unless you get lightning in a bottle with some young transfers, or are you going to go back to the well and try to get guys who are leaving, who are proven performers at the high major level already?
Yeah.
I don't know the answer. That's why I don't get paid to do this, but that's really what it boils down to me.
My take on that is that I believe Underwood's greatest skill by far, and I don't know if it's specifically him, his assistants, the team around him, whatever, but his greatest skill to me is spotting talent. And you know, I've been through the who he had on campus in 2018, you know, that, you know, it's basically four of the top 10 college basketball players last year were four of the six guys who we had visit in the fall of 18. And it's not like they were all like top 10 recruits. None were. Like everybody was ranked, you know, between 30 and 100. And he just was able to go through and say, that guy's a future star and that guy's a future star and that. And even, I mean, look, AJ Storr is pretty good for UConn. Reggie Bass winning games for Central Michigan. You know, even the guys who have decommitted have shown to be pretty good. Pods just, you know, just declared for the draft, you know. So it's, I mean, I'm thinking of the Seinfeld rental car skit. It's not so much, you know, taking the reservation, it's holding the reservation. You know,
right.
The issue has been, let's A, keep the players committed, and B, keep them on campus and happy and build something. Because to me, if Underwood's really good at watching summer games, and, you know, the very first offer to Drew Timmy came from Underwood, you know, so many of these players, I remember when Underwood went to see Kalkbrenner at Trinity Catholic and he wasn't even ranked. I'm like, why are we looking at some tall, skinny kid from Isaiah Williams High School in St. Louis? He doesn't even have any offers. Well, now he's two-time Big East player of the year, or defensive player of the year. And, you know, like, there's all these players that have been Colin Castleton, Landers Nolly, on both on campus, you know, the first football game of the, what was that, 2017 season. So Underwood had been here very shortly, and, you know, just 5 or 6 months, and he's spotted two guys who were future all-conference players where they go. So to me, when a coach has that skill, my brain goes to, well, you got to build it then. Like, you got to develop it, and you got to keep people around, and you just got to keep cranking it out like a Wisconsin under Bo Ryan, where you're constantly spotting your kind of guy, you're keeping them around, and when they hit their junior year, boom, they're a superstar, and, you know, you just keep doing it over and over and over. So that's the thing that, you know, we've had so many players go out the door. Alan Griffin, great spot, great identification. First high major program to offer him. We landed him, comes to Illinois, only lasts 2 years. So, you know, it's we really good at spotting what car to rent, but holding on to the reservation has been our issue.
Except for, you know, that's why I think Underwood was portaling so hard in the offseason, because, yeah, you lost Curbelo, but, you know, obviously his arc at St. John's indicated that it's not a major loss. So it's not like there were any blindside transfers at the end of last season. I think if you ask 100 Illinois fans, you know, one of these sophomores, freshmen going to be sophomores, is going to transfer. It's either RJ Melendez or it's Brandon Podziemski. 100 Illinois fans would have said, I would rather RJ stay and Pods leave.
Yep.
And of course, that's the play on the court turned out the opposite. So outside of Pods and Curbelo, you had natural attrition. You know, Kofi, you know, there was a talk of him staying, and but that was really not going to ever happen. So that's why I think he's like, I have these people I know are leaving. I have to fill this hole. I need to go out. I need to keep this momentum going. And I just think it was a miscalculation. And even though we talk about that, but then we're saying, oh, it's a miscalculation, and we were 9 seed.
Yeah.
And we beat UCLA in one of the most fun atmospheres that I've experienced as an Illinois fan, and beat Texas in the Garden in one of an amazing night.
Yep.
So it's not like it was an abject failure by any stretch, but I just wonder, is, you know, it, as Underwood is meeting with his staff and, you know, thinking in his own brain, well, you know, how do I move forward with this? You know, where does he go? Does he try to go back to building, or does he try to figure out a way to mix the two? Because, you know, this season was a struggle for him too, just not in a way that he struggled, just that it was a struggle for him to figure out how to make this work. You know, at the beginning of the year, it was going to be five outs, and it was going to be switch everything on defense, and we were going to press. And by the middle of the year, that was all gone. But then by the end of the year, we were back to five out again on offense. And it was just, you know, back and forth, just trying to, and I think that's, as a coach, it's got to drive you crazy. So.
Yeah. Yeah. I just think that, yeah, I don't, I'm equally encouraged for the future and discouraged because of this season. I guess maybe that means I'm zeroed out. Like, I'm not high, I'm not low, I'm not positive, I'm not negative. I just am toward the future. Because, you know, I'm hesitating because I don't want to say that, like, Underwood struggles to retain players, but he very much has a, look, it's going to be really tough to play here, and I'm going to be on you constantly, but I'm going to make you better, and, you know, we're going to get there. And this is a different era and a different type of athlete, and, you know, so there is at least that concern based on track record of, I think we can find the right guys, and I think we can build it, and I think we can even maybe turn away from the mercenary plan and go toward this. But then we hear of off-season transfers and it keeps happening. We can't ever get back to that momentum. So that's where my concern lies, is, okay, let's really start to build this for when Epps and Rogers are juniors, they're going to be really good, and let's put something around them. But then I have these thoughts of, like, well, what are the odds we get any of our freshmen to their junior year, because everybody is Millering and Curbelloing their way out the door. So, I don't know. I guess I'm just bouncing around saying this, you know, I'm taking two steps forward and two steps back, but, that's probably my main concern right now, is I'm that roster guy. I'm that, like, build it, keep going, keep the thing, put your program in, keep going. And then, you know, I just fear so many departures this offseason.
Yeah, I think that's the wild card, because, and I totally forgot about Adam Miller, you know, leaving too. But again, you put Adam Miller and Andre Cabrera on this team instead of Matt Meyer and Terrence Shannon Jr. And again, you're 12th in the Big Ten. So none of the Podzinski, no. I mean, it's hard for me to project how he would have performed in the Big Ten. You know, I mean, he was great against in the West Coast Conference, but I think, you know, from what I was reading an article about his draft prospects and his performance in top 100 teams was dramatically less than it was against lesser opponents. So who knows? But my point is that we had attrition last year, certainly to some degree, but they weren't major losses. I think that, you know, I don't think it will be as lucky this year. It's just the odds are not in your favor. What, you know, whether it's Underwood or whether it's a transfer portal world we live in now, or a little bit of both. Yeah, you're going to lose some guys that you don't expect, that you are surprised you're going to lose. But again, then it works both ways. You're going to get some guys that, oh, that's a really good replacement. And so it's just a matter of, again, can you make the pieces work? Because it didn't work as well as anybody wanted it to this year. Underwood included, I'm quite sure.
Yeah. All right, let's talk about the basketball then. Let's start big picture.
Like actual basketball that everyone hates, like the actual basketball that's wedgying all over the court.
Let's talk Big Ten first, and then zero in on Illinois. So I tweeted on Sunday when I saw how many Big Ten teams had lost. You know, there's a basketball problem in my mind. Like there is some connection that this style, you know, people wanted to put it on the refs, people wanted to put it on the recruiting, people wanted to put it on the coaching, the rough and tumble teaching that style. But the general problem with the Big Ten right now, And we've seen it the last 3 years in the tournament. It's not just a fluke. It's not just a, well, tournament's a crapshoot and one game can be whatever, and you can't really look at conferences like that. The Big Ten has a basketball problem, and I want to know your thoughts on it. Like, where is it the coaching? Is it the, you know, I'm not in that thread on Twitter when I tweeted that. It was impossible for people to talk Big Ten without their thoughts just naturally drifting to Illinois. So we'd be talking about the style of play, and then everybody's all about, well, Underwood, no, we're not talking about Underwood. We're talking about the big picture of all the coaches in the Big Ten. You know, what's going on? Like, what is the major thing that is holding things back? Why is that style of basketball getting thumped in the tournament every year? What's the issue with Big Ten basketball?
Yeah, I don't know if you saw my tweet after the Purdue game. I tweeted basically one statement, like, the Big Ten has some shit to figure out, basically.
Yeah.
So it generated some moderate discussion, and my take on it is this. This has been, whether you think you agree or not, you let me know. I think it's the coaching, but what I mean by that is, I think that the Big Ten is a coaches' league and not a players' league. And by that, I mean that most of the Big Ten teams are playing a system, and that system grinds itself through the Big Ten, and it works in the Big Ten. Each team, you know, can kind of find their way in the Big Ten. But when it comes to a tournament like this, I think those systems are scoutable. And I think in a team, that's why you see these teams that have a little more freestyle, a little more athleticism, a little less structure, seem to do better in the tournament like this. That was my take, that the fact that it's a coaches league as opposed to a players league. And, you know, if there's been some random NBA guys and Keegan Murray and Jay Nivey, but for the most part, we're not getting the players because I'm not sure the coaches are recruiting those players, or if they are, they're not, that style of play is not conducive to, or alluring to, the type of players that are going to be NBA type players that are going to get you success in the tournament.
You know, it's funny. You just, people are laugh at me because I'm going to turn it to football. You just described Big Ten West football. Okay.
Yeah.
Like, Big Ten West football is everyone playing. If you can't beat them, join them. Except for maybe Nebraska, I guess. But it's run game, defense, don't even think about scoring 25 points. Your punter's really important. We're just going to choke people out kind of thing. I mean, Minnesota went to that. Illinois is now that under Bielma. Iowa has always been that. Wisconsin has always been that. Minnesota has moved to that style. Really Purdue and Nebraska are the only ones who haven't adopted that. And Nebraska kind of tried but failed at it. So it's built to try to win the West, but not a style that's really ever going to make you a top 10 team nationally. Like, you kind of almost like give up on that because you want to win 8 games in the Big Ten West. So you just kind of like, look, we're not going to do that. It's going to be ugly, but look, it's going to win. And, you know, we can win games against other teams who play the same style. And, you know, it's not something sustainable. It's not going to be even what Michigan or Ohio State or Penn State puts on the field. But, it's kind of proven to work with the type of players we can recruit around here. And, we're just going to go out and do that. So it sounds like, to me, what you're saying about the Big Ten is very similar to that of, you know, maybe winning the conference is a little too important. Maybe that's not the right way to say it, but
no, I think it is. I think there's a huge emphasis placed on that just because of the way that the league has evolved, you know, and the coaching that is in the league. So, and it's not so much, you know, just it's we've talked about, and I remember after the Rutgers game, we were trying to figure out what's this team's Illinois, meaning what's their identity. And because you know what Rutgers' identity is, in Michigan State and Iowa and so on and so forth. But I think Underwood has not been able to establish the identity that he wants, because I think he's still tinkering. I think I don't know that he wants to go that route. And maybe, again, is that the right way to go? Should you try to say, okay, this is what we do, and if you can beat us, then bring it on. It's not no secret what we do here, so here you go. Or should you keep trying to evolve based on the players you have at your disposal? I guess there's two ways to look at it. But again, if you're going to play a system the way the Big Ten has and say, okay, yeah, it's pretty much a blueprint, you know, it's no secret what we do, then you better have players to back that up. And the Big Ten has not had those players in the last 5 years.
I get that, but okay, so how come Michigan failed with Kobe Bufkin and Jet Howard plus a Dickinson who's an all-conference player? Like, I mean, I know Illinois fans just want to say, oh, Juwan Howard sucks. What? Probably, you know.
Juwan Howard sucks.
but what, like, you know, in a sense, there are some players out there. Just nobody's putting together – nobody's taking those players and building something. Like, Bufkin and Howard will both be solid pros. And they had them both and lost in the NIT.
Well, that's a fair point. I don't know.
I mean, I'm just – I'm not saying, like, there's no
– I think that my – on further reflection on my take on that would be, I think Bufkin and Jet Howard are probably both going to be solid pros, but those are like rotation guys. I mean, they're still not like, those weren't like, oh my God, that guy is a dude, you know, like Io was a dude and now he's just a rotation player, but they aren't great college players either.
Yeah.
I think there's lots of great college players who don't become great NBA players. Like Hunter Dickinson will be one, you know, Kofi was one. Trace Jackson Davis will be one, but I think you need both. I think you need great college players who also are going to have an NBA career. And that's again, what I think. I don't think Bufkin and Jet Howard have established that cred. I mean, Jet Howard is injured a lot too. He didn't play, you know, but half of Michigan's games maybe.
Right.
So I think it's a little different if you're a freshman, you know, one-off. And same with Ohio State, you know, you have to have established a little bit of identity. They've had Sensabaugh and they had, who was the guy last year? Malachi Branham, yeah. that right away. So I think part of that is you identify guys, but they're only staying 1 year. Yeah. So,
yep. Well, it goes back to my junior year theory. Like every great Illinois team has a great future pro junior, from Nick Anderson. Although I guess he was technically a sophomore because of Prop 48. No, he's a junior.
He's
a junior. You know. D was a junior. Darren was a junior. Frankie was a junior in 01. I was a junior in 21. Like, you know, having that future NBA guy make it 3 years and not leave after two or whatever has been our formula. And I would like one more, please. So if someone could make that happen, I'd really appreciate it. So, okay, let's take this and now focus it in on Illinois. So
yes. Point. So you don't know if you have those guys yet, because yes. You don't know if Amari Hansberry is going to be that as a junior, or Ty Rogers, or Jaden Epps if he's here, or even RJ, you know?
Yeah. 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 Yeah, you're right. You're right. I mean, I think with Darren, we started to see it sophomore year. I always started to see it. Frankie, we absolutely saw it sophomore year. Nick, we saw it sophomore year. So yeah, I think you know it's coming, maybe. But yeah, that's been our, yeah. I mean, as I'm saying that, I think about the 21 team and what Miller and Curbelo brought to that team. You know, like I, as you said that, I was thinking of the Drexel game, and like Miller was really good in that game. As a Curbelo, he had the one between the legs pass and everything else. Like, it's just so weird to me that we had that and it looked like it was coming, and then it just fizzled. And neither player, where they have gone, has replicated it. And it was almost like they needed to be in that system with those players to make it happen. You know, so I say like we can't see it coming, and then my brain's like, wait, that Drexel game we were drooling over. Oh my god, like Io's here, and even if Io goes pro, then Kofi, and then we've got Miller and Corbello behind him. We are rolling. It is there, and then it just fizzles. So, you know, maybe I need to take my words back. That even when you do think you see it coming, it's not really getting there. But big picture, here's my question with Illinois for you is Underwood comes here and he's preaching what I'm calling the pinch post offense. Okay. This is what we run. This is how we do it. Right. He got a lot of praise for going away from it, because of having Io and Kofi and moving to more ball screen offense and everything else. Moving forward, since we saw us kind of go back to it a little this year, do you think it's best if Underwood gets into a, this is what I do on offense and defense, and we're going to recruit to that and keep rolling with that, and not just like try a different offense each year based on who we find in the transfer portal?
Based on his track record, I think he is kind of willing to see what he can find and put it together afterwards. But that seems what that's been the MO over the last several years.
So you would now, say don't let 2023 sour me on that?
No, I wouldn't. I mean, I don't, I think, again, I do think that his idea of building a roster is correct. I just don't know that this particular mix of players end up being the right mix. But, my gosh, UCLA hasn't scored in 10 minutes. They were up 10, now they're down 13 or down 11. Hmm. Crazy. So
I don't know if you know, but the NCAA tournament ended last week. So
oh, yeah. Yeah.
You're watching some kind of simulation.
Just amazed by the route that they went on. It's crazy. But yeah, so to that point, I just, why would you think, I don't know why we would think otherwise when he's been so willing to change at the drop of a hat. I mean, every single December we go through this,
yeah.
we hear that, this is what we brought in. Here's what we're going to do. And this is going to be fantastic. And the national guys that, you know, get access to Underwood before the season. And they, you know, tweet out, well, this is what I'm hearing from Brad Underwood down in Champaign. And then by December, it's like, well, we got to go back to the drawing board. And,
right,
and so
right.
Why you could, he can, we can, we're going to have a roster, obviously, that at the beginning of next year, that he will, the coaching staff and the PR will come out and say, here's what we're going to try and do this year. But why would I think that by December that it's going to stay that way? Because nothing's proven to be the case in the last really three seasons, I guess. Last year was a little more, not last year, but 22 was a little more consistent, but
you're so right. You're right.
And it's just impossible.
Last 4 years we've had that same conversation. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
We don't know about attrition. We don't know what the transfer portal is going to bring, but I don't think that he is soured on the idea of putting together a roster that's built for March, whatever that means. And I think that's what he'll continue to try and do. I just don't know if you're going to see the mercenary situation again. Although,
yeah,
because you have two choices here. Like, regardless of the shoot, obviously you need shooters. You know, just think about the basketball part of this. But you also need a legitimate point guard. I don't think Jaden Epps is a playmaking kind of point guard, even if he stays. And so, but if you bring in a portal point guard, then you're going to probably, you're doing so either because, or you're going to cause one of your freshman guards to leave, whether it's Sincere Harris or Jaden Epps. And so that's the risk you take. And so what would you rather do?
Yeah.
Bring in a guy who's a proven point guard, whether it's at a mid-major or even a high major, or do you roll with the guys and let them grow into that role over two or three seasons, even if it means having a down year next year? know. But regardless of the system you're playing, you got to have, again, whether it's the Big Ten or the NCAA tournament, you got to have shooters. I think we've proven that. And you've got to have a guy that can play make a little bit.
Yeah.
And we have either of those things.
Yes. Obviously, where I'm going with this is what I tweeted immediately after our loss to Arkansas, which is, you know, to me, right now, we have an offense problem. Not just the shooting in 2023, but when we take the offense we build up against NCAA tournament teams, we've scored, what, 58 against Loyola, 53 against Houston, and 63 against Arkansas? Like, we don't have the offense to hang. Not having the offense to hang is the story of the last three tournament losses.
We got systemed in all each of those games.
Okay. Well, let's talk about that.
So we got systemed in the moment. Not again, the system was different in back-to-back years. In the IO year against Loyola, ball screen, Loyola knew how to defend the ball screen against IO, took him out of the game, and that's why they won. Last year, Houston, they were able to take manage Kofi by sending the post trap at him relentlessly. And our system was different last year. It was more inside out, bringing in to Kofi. If the double team comes, kick it out. And we had capable shooters last year, but we ran into a team that matched up well against that system. And this year, our system of just let, you know, ISO everything, you know, when you're playing a team with the athletes that Arkansas has, that's not going to work in sense. So even though it was three different systems, we got systemed out of each of those games on offense. So I don't know where I'm going with that point, but that's just kind of how the last.
I understand. Here's where how I landed on that. That, you know, this is what I tweeted like the moment we lost the Arkansas game, which is, you know, there's an offensive problem. You know, the last 3 years, if we just go by KenPom's offensive efficiency, in 2021 we were 8. In 2022 fell to 30, and in 2023, as of tonight, it's 68 in offensive efficiency. I would guess 2020, well, let me look it up. I got it right here. I mean, 2020 was probably better than that. 2020 was 38th in offensive efficiency. What was 19? This wouldn't have been higher than 19. We were bad in 19. 83rd. Okay. I want the team I cheer for to score points by putting the ball in the basket. How do we make that happen?
That works, right?
Let's just talk offense, and let's just pretend this roster is fully together next year, which is, you know, foolish to do in the transfer portal era. But let's just, for the sake of having something to discuss, what do you do to make the offense work? Fell to 68th in college basketball this year in offensive efficiency. A lot of that is the shooting, obviously, but. Yeah, what do you do to make this work?
It starts with the lead guard. I just don't know how you go into next season with Jaden Neff as your point guard, as your lead guard, so to speak, or as a two guard, I should say. Absolutely, but he's not a playmaker, and I just don't know that's is a issue is that is you're going to be able to solve without bringing in somebody. So whether it's the freshman, Lawhorn Gibbs, or Gibbs Lawhorn, DGO, Gibbs Lawhorn. I mean, maybe we hit lightning in the bottle with him. But if not, Sincere Harris is not your answer as a playmaker either. He's not. I don't think that's his role. So you're looking at you need some sort of ball handler playmaker that's not on the roster right now. Whether that's portal or whether that's freshman or Europe, or maybe it's Nick, maybe it's Ben Trovato.
Yes. Maybe it is Moretti. Maybe he's the answer to all of our issues.
Maybe we're due for, you know, lightning in the bottle.
Right.
But that's,
let me pause you there and just ask a question. Yeah. Why are you so sure it's not Epps?
because he's not, he's never at any level been a guy who distributes the ball. So
he can get to the rack. He can score from weird angles.
He is a scorer.
He can score, but he's not a creator.
Exactly. He will play at Illinois and score a lot of points, but I have it in front of me. His assist rate was .9%. Matt Meyer almost had a better assist rate than Jaden Epps.
Okay.
So it's just, again, that's what I mean.
Point taken.
So if you don't have shooters, which again, you don't have shooters on this roster right now either. I'm sure RJ will bounce back a little bit. Ty Rogers is going to be an amazing college player. I doubt he ever becomes a plus shooter. Jaden Epps is a functional shooter. But again, you know, back to where the roster holes are, you're going to need some shooters to sprinkle onto this roster one way or another. So if you need to really make it work, you need both. You can ham and egg it with one or the other. If you bring in a couple of really good shooters, then you can kind of work with Dane inside out, kind of like you did with Kofi. If you get a playmaker, then you can kind of find that guard who can put your guys in position. So even if they're not good shooters, they're getting good shots, and you can make it work. But I think to really make this offense work, you need a playmaker, and obviously you need some shooters. I mean, that's as simple as it gets without getting too wonky about it.
I just want to pause and reflect on how strange this conversation is compared to the last 40 years. Mm-hmm. You know, in years, if we were doing this podcast 4 years ago, we would simply be talking about what we have for next year. And are there any high schoolers that are maybe, you know, they blew up this winter and they'd be available in the set, you know, for the late signing period and this and that. There was no, here's the team, here's what our struggles were, here's how we go immediately fix it with players from other schools. I just want to note how bizarre it is, because 4 years ago tonight, we couldn't have had this conversation. You know,
correct.
Like this, it's crazy how much the portal has changed the game. You know, as you pointed to Kansas State, they're, you know, that Kansas State team that we beat in Kansas City at that tournament last year with Weber's last year and everything else. In 1 year, through transfers and through this and that, they immediately turn around and might be a Final Four team. It's just that never ever happened. First year of a new coach? Are you kidding? First year of a new coach after a failed thing? That would be like somebody taking over in, you know, from Gross after 17 and Underwood just suddenly, you know, on the doorstep of the Final Four in 2018. It's just crazy how much it has changed the game. You know, as I've said before, it's crazy how much, no disrespect to the summer AAU circuit, but it's crazy how much it doesn't matter anymore.
It doesn't. And it brings up an interesting point. The numbers that I'm going to throw out are not accurate, but it's close. I read a stat that of the top 100 incoming freshmen from last year, you know, RSC, our top 100 recruits, only like 20 of them were double-figure scorers in college this year.
I think it was 13. I saw that tweet. I can't remember who it was. I think it was 13 of the 100. Yep.
Of the top 100 transfers, like 60 of them were double-figure scorers.
Yep.
So for a coach, it's like being in a toy store. You're like, oh, my God, this is the greatest thing ever. It's the easiest way for us to get better quick. But again, is it fool's gold? So
Yep. Because if you get tempted by that, and you plug it in, and they're one-year players, and they're gone. What if you would have gotten that guy who was only averaging 7.4 points a game, but then next year he's going to go for 15.5? You know,
and
did
does
you
it
stunt your own growth by the toy store? Yes,
right. Because what in a vacuum, what does double-figure scoring mean? I mean, we got double-figure scoring from Matt Meyer and Harris Sainer Jr., and almost in danger. What did she have? Did he ever double figures?
I believe it was 9.9. I think it was, somebody was 9 point, Coleman maybe? Somebody was like 1 point away from averaging 10 points.
Dane was 9.5.
Okay.
Coleman was 9.9. Jaden was 9.5 too. But point being that in a vacuum, what does that mean? It's, yeah, they're scoring, but you know, somebody's got to score on bad teams, right? So maybe that's it. It's like I said, school's goal. So you're negatively impacting your program's growth by bringing in guys who are in and out, and you never get a chance to create and build any momentum. It'll be a fascinating thing moving forward. You know, I think you watch Purdue in the Big Ten, and maybe Izzo, because he was very anti-portal last year. You watch those two programs moving forward and see how they progress, as opposed to if Underwood's going to lean into it. Obviously, you know, Nebraska it leans into that. Penn State has. So, yeah, it'll be fascinating.
So are you – we're over an hour now, so we'll have to cut it off at some point here. But
yeah,
are you – well, I'll just say this: are you bullish or bearish on next season? Like we obviously don't know what we're gonna get from the portal yet, but how you know, state of the union, where are you at?
I'm very bearish on next year, just as a one-off season, meaning that I don't think we will be as good as a 9 seed next year, but I don't necessarily mean that's bad for the growth of the program. It'll be brutal, you know, for people who are already displeased at Underwood's performance in the tournament. If he doesn't make the tournament, you're like, well, what's the point now? If he's not even making the tournament, what's the point? But I think for the benefit of the program, you need to let guys grow into their roles, and that means leaning into your freshmen and sophomores, and maybe bringing in portal guys who will also grow. And again, maybe you get lightning in a bottle with a couple of these freshmen. I don't know. They don't jump off the page as guys who will be immediate impact. But
it kind of reminds me of the Purdue 2021 season.
Right.
That's what that makes me think of. Like, they kind of doubled down on the reset. Like, 2020 was a mess for them. I saw that they promote like 8 tournaments in a row or whatever, but like, that's a little bit, I mean, they were what, 15 and 16 in 2020? Like, hey guys, you can't really claim, you know, you had a losing season in there. So anyway, it's just more of my Big Ten bitterness coming out. But yeah, that maybe that's a comp, is that, you know, Purdue almost made the Final Four in 2019. The Carson Edwards team. Edwards is gone. A few other guys are gone. 2020 was a really rough year. Just they didn't have it. He kind of reset again with freshmen. Got back to what they were doing. You know, the portal was there, but they didn't really go crazy in it. They just tried to get back to who they were. Really rough start to that season, but they eventually, I don't remember what seed they were, like a 10 seed that year, something like that. And then, you know, really, really had it going. So maybe the goal for next year is Purdue's 2021. I hate to use the Boilers as a model or whatever, but, you know, I just think of that season as them getting back to what they wanted to do.
It may very well be a model, but it is impossible. I mean, it's almost silly to even talk about it, because there's so many moving parts that are still to happen. So it's just, but based on, just in my brain, who I think will stay and who I think will go, and what the likelihood of the incoming, the impact of the incomers would be, I think it'll be a struggle next year.
Yeah.
That's based on complete speculation. That's like, you know, grasping at the wind. I just don't know. Yeah. And let me just say, at this tournament that you're not acknowledging, UCLA just put together an Illini 2005 Illini Arizona Light comeback. They were down, I want to say 10 with like a minute and a half to go, and they just took the lead with 12 seconds left.
Well, I would turn that on, but I hate the tournament and it doesn't exist, and I won't.
Exactly. I mean, if it did, that's what's going on. And
if it did exist in the simulation, that's what's happening.
Over
in the metaverse, there's some things going on, but as we all know, it's fake and it's not happening because the tournament ended last week. I just looked up Purdue. And I was wrong. They were a 4 seed. I forgot they went on that run at the end of 2021.
Yeah. So I thought you were talking about COVID when they were, that's when they were below 5. The year that we would.
Yes. The COVID year, they were 16 and 15.
Right.
When everything shut off. So maybe that's what I'm thinking. I'm just thinking of how they kind of went away from, like, the harms thing didn't really work. And, you know, they just kind of reset the next year. Travion Williams, became their guy. And, you know, they focused it around him. And they didn't let, you know, Eric Hunter wasn't a thing. And they just got back to their Purdue, like, okay, there's Stefanovic and he shoots the threes and then we're going to do this and we're going to let our freshman guard do this and, you know, got back to who they were doing. So I would really like to see us get back to some identifiable thing next season that says, okay, we have a coach who can really identify talent and we can build this program and we can keep this rolling and we could continue an NCAA tournament streak.
You know what makes it happen? You know what defines that? Again, a lead guard that you can hang your head on. And Gonzaga just ran the Villanova play and made a three, and they're going to win this game.
The Villanova national title play, scoop it to a guy coming up on the wing?
Yep, and he drained it, and Gonzaga's going to escape after.
Was it Malachi Smith?
It was not. Okay. It was Julian Straubel. But Malachi Smith had played a big game in his role in this game. But
sorry, anyway. Was it simulation metaverse Malachi Smith? Because
yeah.
This really isn't happening?
Correct.
Okay.
He's playing for Chattanooga.
Final question.
Yes.
You know, like, there's two things we're talking about here, right? Like, one, fourth tournament in a row. Third tournament in a row, fourth season where we would have been in the tournament in a row. Back to where we should be back in this. Versus... and it just never happened. It was a mess, and it's just kind of a this. Where do you, like, shake out on the 2023 season?
Oh, I don't even know how to answer that question. I mean, I was probably more frustrated this year than any other season, but that is so far away from the idea of I'm so glad the season is over. I was.
That's a really good way to put it. Really good way to put it.
It made me, I was just, I had regressed to, you know, I'd settled in as a fan the last couple of years to, wow, we're a really good program and I can enjoy college basketball, all of it, because even though we might lose a game here or there, I still enjoy it because I know we're relevant and we're part of the mix and it's just college basketball is fun and it wasn't live or die every night and so on and so forth. This year, it's just been like, ever since the Missouri, really since the Penn State game at home, yeah. It's just struggle to follow this team. And they're so frustrating and so maddening. I can't even imagine what it must be like to coach this group. But I am devastated that it's over. I'm so mad right now that I'm watching these games. And even though this, like you said, it doesn't exist, I want us to be playing. I would have been thrilled for the, oh, we were 5-5 in the year and not making any momentum, and we flamed out in the Big Ten tournament. We went on a magical NCAA tournament run. That would have made my March.
Right.
So, I'm as frustrating as it was. I still enjoyed it. I thought it was a fun group. Matt Myers, as despite his shortcomings as a player, what a fun dude to cover and watch. You know, what a personality.
Yep.
And so there are things about this season that I really enjoyed and like every season, but it's the most frustrating season that I can remember since Bruce Weber's days, not just from a frustrating standpoint, like not living up to what I thought they could be kind of a thing. Yeah. Just thinking, I'm writing it when I went to Purdue that I'm still waiting for this team to break out, to have one of those crazy shooting games, to have something all come together. And it never happened. It just literally never happened. You had great individual performances, but you never had a game where the entire team played to its potential, and that's what's so frustrating about it. That's what will leave a sour taste in my mouth for the season, is that it just never came together.
Really well said. I don't want to add anything else because that puts a cap on it. So third year in a row we've done this postmortem. It's not as devastating as the last two, but that devastation of the last two spoke to what kind of seasons they were. So, all right, we're done. It's football season. Too bad the NCAA tournament ended last week, because I understand people really enjoy that this time of year. But, you know, what are you going to do? Spring game. It's about a month away. And, you know, we can just focus on those things since basketball's over.
Enjoy that.
I will. All right, we'll talk soon. Thanks for doing this.
Yep. Well,